by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, True Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Woo, Janet, it is summertime finally. Are you thawed out at all from the winter and the cool months?
Well, you know what always happens is once it gets warm outside, it gets really cold inside. So, you know, it's sitting around in your down vest in the office. So, I haven't thawed out. So I'm glad that I get to get out a lot during the summer and do some things because it is still a little bit frosty, even when it's nice outside.
You know, I was talking to a couple of folks this week that said that, oh, finally, summer weather is here. And I thought, you know, summer weather's not really been that bad, just like kind of this spring weather wasn't that bad, but it is the summer months and some big things happen with the wildlife this time of year.
That's right. Usually kind of around that first week of June, a lot of big game start dropping their fawns or calves and ducklings are wandering around and we see birds falling out of the trees, all sorts of fun things. There's nothing cuter than seeing your first antelope fawn of the year. Those things are just incredible.
Yeah, you know, when I play golf, the antelope herds that are very rampant on the golf course have just had their babies, and it's kind of neat that they're all kind of teaching them how to navigate around the fresh, lush grass of the golf course. And
well, those happen to be maybe the smarter pronghorn than maybe some of the other ones that are suffering out there on some dry sagebrush. But no, it is absolutely this time of year. And, you know, it is a tactic that some of big game have that if they all kind of drop their babies around the same time, kind of during within a week or two period, you know, that really helps with that predator prey relationship. So there's a higher survival of their fawns, but that also means there's just a pretty intense time here kind of at the beginning of June where we get a ton of phone calls about abandoned wildlife. And we just want to remind people that that is not the case 99% of the time.
Right. Well, especially here in town where, like I say, we have herds of antelope or mule deer here in town that will make their way through town and drop those babies on the golf course or drop them in your neighborhood. And one of the key things is mama's going to come back and get them.
That's right. You know, it's so crazy that you bring up the in-town side of things. A couple of years ago, we had a mule deer who dropped her fawn in the parking lot of the Beacon.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, in the night she was sneaking to the Beacon too, probably had her fawn. And then, you know, again, one of these tactics that they do is they teach their fawns to lay low, lay still, and they go off and feed, and then they will come back and nurse their fawns. And if they don't hang right around them, right, then the coyotes or other predators may not know where their fawn directly is. And so it is this tactic. And so we as humans kind of walk in, and why would you not think that a, you know, fawn laying in the middle of the parking lot of the Beacon was abandoned? But in fact, mama is just over the hill, you know, trying to protect her child. So it is an interesting dynamic that happens for sure.
So, and that doesn't just isn't limited to just the deer and the antelope or the elk. I mean, we're talking, you mentioned birds, you talked about geese and ducks and, you know, all the little birds and that are floating around now.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, if you're talking about ducklings, they often get separated from, you know, because there's 10, 12 of them all together, they get separated from their mom. And so it does appear like, oh gosh, there's mom way over there with her group of ducklings. And then there's this poor other group over here and they're separated. And so maybe this group doesn't have a mom to kind of teach them those things. And so people do panic there as well. And I know like in the town of Lander, for some reason, there is a high number of ducklings that get turned in. And, you know, our employees just run around and end up trying to find, you know, another hen that will actually adopt those ducklings, and it may not always be successful. So again, the message is, if you find newborn wildlife that appears to be separated from their mother, appears to be abandoned, 99% of the time it is not, mama will circle back and get them. If we interfere as humans, oftentimes we end up causing detrimental casualties, whatever you kind of want to say, because we can't substitute. We don't have a high number of rehabilitation places in Wyoming. And so it's not something that people can necessarily just take on. And there is fines and punishment for having live wildlife or possession of wildlife. So just kind of keeping that in mind. Now, the best thing to do if you do see those things is just to leave them alone and to give us a call. The case with, the beacon fawn, we were able to kind of go and watch and spotted mama hanging around and knew that things were going to be okay. And so just making sure that, you notify us, but you try not to intervene. And I just, I want to reiterate that it is never, a person's fault when they try to save the baby bunnies or that their cats, were after those sorts of things. Everybody always has really good intentions, but sometimes we just can't fix the problem.
Yeah, and we also talk a lot about feeding of animals, and this is another major issue now too, because these fawns are being dropped, the babies are going down, but you want to make sure that the bears and the mountain lions and those type of predators aren't coming into the town even more and being attracted to these animals.
That's right. Like feeding, we always talk about this, feeding turkey and deer does bring more mountain lions into areas, because why wouldn't they? It's easy prey. They don't have to run around. They've got cubs just like kittens, just like everybody else does. And so they're trying to, save their resources as well. And those turkeys and deer could be, kind of easy prey. Same with garbage, all of that kind of stuff. And as we know, once, there's that saying, a fed bear is a dead bear. Once they kind of get that human food or an easy contact reward, they'll continually go back to that source. And that is not a good thing for animals to do. I mean, fox, all of those, coyotes, everything will come in for that easy prey source. And we want to make sure that we can take care of those, young, the magnificent newborn wildlife that we have around Wyoming, and just keep them as healthy as possible.
Janet, one thing that we talked to Dan Thompson a couple of months ago about bears and Casper Mountain bears. We don't have the grizzlies here, but we do have a pretty good number of black bears. And with all of the construction and kind of the changes going on top of Casper Mountain, will those animals be interfered with at that point? Because their normal, their normal treks and their normal paths may be confused now with the big machinery things going on.
Sure, Andrew. First and foremost, I have not been on the mountain yet to see all of the construction. So take what I'm going to say with a grain of salt. But I imagine it's not much different than, mountain bikers, four-wheelers, horseback riders, all of those campers and recreationists that love to enjoy the mountain and Muddy Mountain all summer long as well. So I don't anticipate that it will affect their, normal places that they go. They may wander off just a little bit to, to a different place, but it shouldn't affect populations or be too much for them. But I haven't been up there yet, so.
Well, I can tell you, if they tell you to wait, and you're going to have to wait for 30 minutes to get up, you're going to have to wait for 30 minutes to get up on top because of the construction. Okay. It's pretty wild up there right now. So, you may want to try a different recreation area. And we've talked about that a little bit, too, over the last few weeks. But the animals, leave them alone. Leave the babies alone. And I know just the other day, my dad happened to catch a picture of a little baby fawn that was hidden in the bushes and knew, to stay away from it. But within an hour, mom was back with that baby. So Really, mom is going to come back. And Jenna, what about if you see an animal, a baby that you can tell is really injured? Like you can tell maybe something got a hold of it or it fell out of a tree or something.
Absolutely. Give us a call. Anytime you're in question, anytime you don't know what you need to do, absolutely give us a call and we will go check out the situation and see how we can assist and see what that animal might need. But again, like if it's a baby bunny, try not to put it in the box and bring it into the office. That's not going to help that bunny at all. And we're not going to be able to help that situation much either. So, you know, if you find a fluffy, cute bird on the ground and you can keep your pets away from it, that's fantastic. Don't hesitate to pick it up and put it into a higher location, you know, kind of right where it was, but just up a little bit so that you don't have to worry about the mom finding it. You're not moving it too far, but you are taking it to a safer location from, you know, cats, dogs, walkers, cars, whatever it might be. That is fantastic. And feel free to do that. But don't put it in a box or bring it to us.
Very good. Of course, go to wgfd.wio.gov to find out more information and all the contact information you're going to need. Janet, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Drew.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, really been thinking about getting out and just, you know, having a great weekend with no phones and throwing the tent up and just relaxing.
Yeah, you know, it's nice to be outdoors, and especially this time of year, it's the weather's actually cooperating pretty nicely. You know, maybe a couple thunderstorms in the afternoons, but man, it's nothing better than sitting in a tent listening to thunderstorms.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I noticed about the weather the next coming couple of weeks is we're going to be back into the 70s, and it's going to cool off a little bit. So those nights will really get really chilly when you're out camping around, and especially if you go up higher in the mountains.
Yeah, it's funny how you can be up there in the mountains and, you know, have a sweatshirt on during the day, and then all of a sudden it drops all the way down to 50, and you're like, holy cow, that's cold, you know, but we tolerate it during the winter months.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll tell you that come on in and check out all the different levels. You guys have levels of sleeping bags, and that's one thing we don't really ever talk about, but some of those sleeping bags are rated as low as like zero.
Yeah, some of them are like minus 30, minus 40. So there's a huge variation. You know, you got the mummy sacks, and you've also got, you know, just the big square ones and the oversized ones. And there's just nice to have around. I mean, even if you're not camping, but maybe you got some company coming over or kids coming over and you just want to throw them downstairs in front of the TV.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's good to have those things around. And we've got a pretty good selection of not only sleeping bags, but tents as well.
So if you come in here and you check out all the different camping items, and we've talked about this a lot when we were talking about going out elk hunting and everything, is you have the MREs, the meals ready mm-hmm. to eat, and you have a whole wall of them. You know, it's crazy how that whole industry has exploded.
Yeah, and there's over the last few years, you know, we've kind of just buckled down on a couple manufacturers, Peak Refuel and Mountain House. Sorry, there's some great ones out there and some great actually tasting ones. And so the Peak Refuel has kind of gained a little bit of momentum with customers just because they're like a two portion meal.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, fire up the old hot water, you know, get the jet boil going and throw that water in there, and you know, you can be a cook for the night.
4th of July is going to be here in the next couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and being out on the grill is pretty nice this time of year.
Oh yeah, you know, getting home and firing up the Traeger grill on the back deck, you know, is awesome. But at the same time, you know, being up, you know, camping and grabbing one of those portable Coleman grills and just, you know, tailgaters, throw it out of the back of the truck, set it up, put a little propane bottle on it, and you know, you're cooking right out in the open.
It's a game changer. And the one that I have, it like breaks down to like five different uses. You can mm-hmm. even use it as a wok.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those are pretty cool.
Yeah. The lid turns upside down, I think. And then yeah. you can use that as a wok. But yeah, most of them anymore come with like a griddle. So you can, you know, kind of do like your whatever you would normally do like on a Blackstone on these griddles. And really just, I mean, kind of get creative with it.
I don't know how many times I've ruined bacon and eggs trying to cook it in a cast iron pan on a fire.
Right.
You know, you can't adjust that fire temperature. You got to move it all around.
But we've got that, those, all the Lodge, you know, Dutch oven stuff, you know, I mean, it's nothing. I mean, it's awesome to have like an apple cobbler or cherry cobbler out there. I mean, some of those recipes, and we've got recipe books for all the Lodge cast iron stuff that we have. And, you know, that's kind of fun too. It's like a whole different world of exploring some outdoor cooking.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that preparing for that is one of the things too, and having a good cooler to take all your gear out. And, you know, one cooler these days, you can get it all done, you know, get your ice, get your drinks, and then all your food.
Well, and that's just it, you know, like especially, you know, the days of the $40 and $50 cooler are gone, you know, and obviously price increases on everything. But what we're seeing is that, you know, a person's buying a cooler and it's lasting a lifetime, mm-hmm. literally a lifetime at a good quality one. All these new Rotomold coolers, you know, everything from Wild Gear to Yeti to Grizzly, you know, you're making a one-time commitment, and, you know, you're not having to, you know, have to replace one because the lid went bad or it started cracking or that kind of stuff. These coolers nowadays are built to last, and we carry a ton of good quality coolers in the store right now.
And especially guys that go out in the backcountry, you know, whether it's elk hunting or moose hunting or bear hunting or, you know, however they're going out, they're Grizzly approved, and, you know, they're pretty easy to handle.
Yeah, well, we actually carry a Grizzly 400 cooler, which a lot of people are using to do ice baths in. Marathon runners and all these guys that are wanting to do ice baths. And, you know, I really didn't think about it, but, you know, you fill this thing up with ice and you set it out there and you jump in there. And a lot of times, you know, the ice would dissipate overnight. Well, now that you're putting in a big heavy duty cooler, you know, you might have to add ice every 3 or 4 days, but you can do an ice bath every day if you wanted to. So
is it designed specifically for ice baths? Because I can't imagine trying to haul that thing out to a...
Well, this thing is actually designed to actually be lifted with forks, off a forklift. So there are people that are using those during, like, hunting seasons where, I mean, I don't know how many animals you could put in it, but you could easily quarter, you know, a couple elk probably, and it would hold a couple elk at a time.
Wow.
So it's a beast, you know. It's something you have to see at least.
Yeah, no kidding. And you got one in here on the floor too.
We do. Yeah. Check out.
You don't put ice in it and let the employees get in.
No, we need to be able to move it around. Yeah.
Well, get out here and check it out. If you're heading out to one of the lakes this weekend, grab some bait, grab all your gear, and grab the life jackets. Make sure you got the right fitting ones here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Drew and Brian back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, it's weird for us not to be out on the water doing these interviews recently, because we've been out at Glendale quite a little bit.
Yeah, it's been kind of fun, you know, just to be out there catching some fish and then take a minute to do the show. But back in the office.
You actually were out there this week and really kind of slayed them over the last few days.
You know, it's the water conditions are changing again. They've stopped dropping the water from what I've seen, and it's kind of stabilized. But, okay. Yeah, what was kind of fun is there's a pretty good bite going on down there, and there's people all around you. And yesterday, there was a family out there, and the kid said, "Dad caught one! Like, four! He's got four now!" just announcing to everybody how many fish they've caught. So I'm like, yeah, it's like, well, Dad finally caught one.
Yeah, right. This guy over here has like got a whole lemon already and just pulled up.
But yeah, no, it's fun. There's a lot of people out there enjoying the lake, and you know, there's quite a few jet boats and water skiers and that kind of stuff kicking in. But you know, the fishermen are kind of in their own fishing areas, and the wake boats and jet boats are in their own spot. So no, it's been pretty good. And you know, we got Father's Day weekend this weekend, so it's going to be another busy weekend at all the lakes, I'm sure.
So you were catching fish left and right. Were you catching them on slip bobbers, or was it kind of a mixture?
You know, I do like slip bobbers. Yeah. But actually, we started the morning off casting some cranks, pitching cranks, and we caught a couple doing that right off the bat. And then went back into one of the bays and just started throwing some jigs and kind of messed around with some plastics and then some, you know, leeches and worms. And the jig and a worm was really kind of what did it. I mean, it was just, it's kind of silly. I mean, it's just a basic fishing, right?
You yeah. know,
regular fishing, as one of the gals I took out last week called it. And we were just regular fishing with a jig and a worm. And it was kind of fun because we talk about the different line stuff that I like using. And I really like using a high-vis line so I can actually see it. And we're fishing in like 12 foot of water. And a lot of times you could see the jigs, like your line moving towards you before you could actually feel the fish bite it. They're just kind of sucking it up and just swimming off with it. And so me and the guy I was fishing with, we're just kind of giggling. Oh, there's another one. No, got to catch up to him and set the hook. And so, yeah, I mean, a real, real basic presentation. But we did catch some on slip bobbers. And I've said in the past where a lot of times with slip bobbers, my favorite presentation was a slip bobber with a leech.
Mm-hmm.
But the worms were so good, and for some reason they just weren't hitting the leeches like I wanted them to. And so I did throw just a, I don't know, a 1-inch piece of crawler on a, just wacky rigged it on a hook on a slip bobber. And all of a sudden, we started catching fish doing that too. So
it's like you were Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn out there on mm-hmm. just on the old pond, you
just
know,
regular fishing.
yeah, and it's so fun. We've talked about that before, where you know the way that you know you put so much thought into fishing these days, and how many different you know tools you have. But then, like our grandfathers or you know our older parents, like they didn't know any of that. It was just regular fishing. And I can remember my grandpa holding up catfish that you know would touch the ground just off of an old piece of worm.
Yeah, and we did catch I don't know, 3 or 4 catfish this week, you know, not really even trying for catfish. A few perch, a few crappie, caught a few carp as well. You know, that's always kind of fun, just a good little battle. But it's been good. The fishing's been good. The water temperature is really starting to get warm. So I think it was almost 70 degrees down there at Glendale this last week. But we've been talking to, you know, seeing some results from the guys from the fishing league up at Pathfinder. Mm-hmm. So they're catching some fish up there too. And in my opinion, you know, that continues to just get better and better as it gets warmer and later in the year.
So we are heading to Boisen next in the Wyoming Walleye Stampede in just a couple of weeks, and there's some openings there that they can still get in on. But what's the difference between Boisen now than Boisen, say, January, as far as condition-wise, compared to Glendale? Because it always seems like it's a little colder, a little different condition mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, Boisen being a reservoir as well, so you know we're dealing with fluctuating water levels, and you know they use that you know primarily for flood control as well as irrigation. But the Wind Rivers are really just starting to melt off pretty hard right now. So Bureau of Rec looked like they did a pretty good job of you know getting it. I think they lowered it maybe 6 feet, but the reservoirs come up 5 feet in the last just week or so. So it's bringing in a lot of that runoff, and it's super muddy on the south end of that reservoir right now. So I mean, conditions are going to be, you know, who knows what it's going to look like in a couple of weeks. But my guess is that the runoff is going to start slowing down. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to hit peak temperatures, you know, probably this week, right? And so they're going to get a lot of melt off and runoff, and that south end of the lake eventually will start slowing down. And right now it's pretty muddy all the way through Tough Creek, but as it slows down, it'll clear up, and then you know you'll be able to catch fish any part of that lake that you want to go to.
When it comes to water temperature on something like that, when you get that snow melt, I mean the mountains are quite a ways off, but mm-hmm. but still it's you know mountain snow that's right. melting through there.
Yeah, I mean it's got a long ways to run to warm up as it goes, and
right.
that dark muddy water tends to warm up faster than clear water. You know, it absorbs that sunlight a little bit better. So I don't think water temperature is going to be too much of an issue. Like the runoff isn't causing too much of a decrease in water temperature.
So if you're fishing Glendale on Saturday and you're heading to Boisen on Sunday, are you running the same type of setups?
You know, every reservoir fishes a little bit differently just because of different structure. You know, you kind of have to look at water clarity, water color, the water temperatures, and then, you know, a lot of people just like to fish how they like to fish, you know. Regular fishing works pretty good over at Boisen, you know. A jig and a worm is a really good presentation. I've had some really good days, but I've also had some really good days pitching crankbaits up to shore. I know before this runoff started, guys were catching quite a few good fish shallow with you know, just running plastics up, you know, up in the shallows, and well, 1 to 2, 3 foot of water. So you know, as they drop that water, obviously I think those fish kind of slide out, but now the water is going to be start coming back up and those fish should start moving shallow again. So
it is just keeping trust in your electronics and your gut really on a lot of that.
Yeah, just patterns, you know. I mean, these reservoirs kind of do the same thing, you know. It might not be exactly from year to year, but you know, this might be the same pattern that happened 3 years ago, you know. So the more you get out and the more you fish and the more you can recognize those types of patterns, the more successful you're going
to
be.
So it's a great opportunity to get out. With the weather being as nice as it is, you get a little sun, a little vitamin D that you've been craving all spring, and check it out. And then make sure you stop by here, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, before you head out.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
And welcome back to the program. You know, on this show, we like to give you innovative ideas and things that really contribute to your love of the outdoors. And we're bringing in Steve Moore. And Steve Moore is the founder of the Camp in Car. And when I saw this product, I knew automatically I needed to talk to Steve because of the fact my wife and I love to adventure. And Steve, welcome in on the show.
Thanks, Drew.
Adventuring is something that we love to do. And in Wyoming, you could drive for hours and not see a motel, not see a hotel, or even a campground that would be safe. But with Camp in Car, my goodness, our lives can be changed.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, true as that may be about Wyoming, you know, it's a beautiful big place, lots of open space. And, you know, sometimes even if you do have a hotel, you don't, you know, it's not necessarily one you want to stay in, right? Like,
right.
Or spend the money on it. And there's just so many benefits to being able to, like, camperize your own vehicle for that travel flexibility.
You know, I feel that people think about doing this. Maybe they have an older van, or maybe they have a minivan or pickup truck. Like me, one of the things that I've always thought about is, well, if I get a camper shell, then I can just throw an air mattress in there. But that's not very efficient if you have a lot of items that you're bringing. But then you enter what you've created with Camp in Car, and that covers just about everything.
Yeah, I mean, we get that question a lot about, like, why not just throw a mattress on the floor of my minivan or my truck bed or whatever. And you can definitely do that. I think that's a good way to, like, just sort of test out the initial, like, ooh, do I even like sleeping in my vehicle kind of phase. But yeah, as soon as you get into the realm of, like, actually going on a trip, having stuff you need to bring, you've taken up all your kind of interior space for just a bed, and you don't have anywhere to store things, and you know, elevating your sleeping platform and kind of having that space is just one of the simple things we can do to kind of help people make it a more viable option for that travel.
It's so funny because my wife and I at Christmas time were traveling back to my family, and we took her vehicle. She has like a crossover, so you know, it's got a good backside. And we thought, we'll just sleep back there on the way. And we ended up sleeping on half on a case of water, half on a duffel bag, a computer bag, because we just did a mat and it just wasn't big enough.
Yeah, I know the crossovers are definitely a little trickier than some other vehicles too, because they've got those seats that don't fold down all the way. And so we've actually got a new product coming out in July that is really focused on, like, leveling out that space, giving you a little bit of lift, and making it actually feasible to, like, camp in, like, a RAV4 without having to, you know, be really short or, like, kind of at an awkward angle. Like, that's one of the bigger challenges in car camping for sure. And we've built a lot of units like that in our custom shop, but we're super stoked to finally offer something like that that is available to ship around and people can purchase from our store online.
So how did something like this pop into your head? One day you were just like, I think I'm going to build something for my car.
Yeah, it was a little, it was a bit of a journey for sure. I had like an office job in Seattle and I liked it. It was a great gig. But I was in my mid 20s and just kind of felt like I didn't want to be stuck in just, you know, urban office life forever. And so I decided to leave and I bought a Honda Element, which is like a boxy kind of SUV they don't make anymore, but they've got a great cult following and a big community around them. And my friend from childhood, who's the co-founder of Camping Car Martin, helped me design a kind of sleeping platform and storage system for camping in the Element, and we put it in there. And I actually left my job and lived out of that for 6 months in Alaska and Northern Canada, traveled around, played music, just kind of goofed off, had a good time. And, you know, Martin's an engineer, so his build was really pro looking and people kept asking what company did my car conversion. And I was just like, well, it was my buddy and I. And so I was like, well, if people think this is like pro quality, like maybe we should actually think about doing this for a living. You know, we were when I got back to Washington, where I live and where Camping Car is based, both of us were pretty unhappy with our jobs and we were living together in Port Townsend where Camping Car is headquartered. And we just decided one day, like, screw it, let's start a company, let's convert cars for a living.
So obviously you did this for yourself first, but then was it like family members, you're like, hey, I've got this, I want you to try it out?
Initially I mean, it was like the first couple clients were like friends and family, you know, doing it at a discount, just trying to get stuff out there. And then eventually we had, you know, little portfolio of projects and we were able to sort of start convincing randoms to work with us essentially. And then that kind of just snowballed from there, from, you know, those initial really simple car camper builds to now we do, you know, everything from those builds to the products to full service kind of Mercedes Sprinter and Transit and ProMaster conversions with all the bells and whistles for like a tiny home on wheels, you know, proper van conversion. So we've really kind of expanded to be able to like serve a huge variety of people to, you know, with the goal of getting them out there camping in their vehicle, giving them more freedom and flexibility.
You know, one of the things that I see, you know, looking at the website, which is campthelettercar.com, is it's affordable. It's way more affordable than going and buying a brand new or even a used camper trailer or you know an RV, and really it looks like a basic build that is efficient and comes with everything you need to install it.
Yeah, that's the goal really. I mean, you know, if you already have a car that like has the space for you to sleep in it, then it's definitely more affordable than just going and getting an RV or a trailer. And it's like more fun to drive and easier and it's less stuff to deal with. You know, I think a lot of people who have experience in RV camping can attest to the amount of chores that go along with it, the amount of maintenance that goes along with it, the expense of all the gas, and it's not a relaxing thing to drive or tow. And so really this just kind of like, it's like at the end of the day, if your biggest concern is just wanting to sleep and be mobile and you know, have that autonomy, then let's, you know, go simpler.
Yeah. And you know, like I said here, adventuring in Wyoming is something where I'll be like, you know what? I just want to go today. I don't want to have to make plans.
Yeah.
And and that's perfect for this because I can take it out, leave it in my garage, and when I'm ready to go, just throw her in and hit the road.
Exactly. And there's so much like competition these days over conventional lodging and conventional campground reservations. And if you live somewhere like Wyoming or Washington or Alaska or California, especially, or Utah, you know, so many states where there's so much public land, right, so much BLM, National Forest, DNR land, you don't need a reservation or even a registration to camp in most of these places. You can just kind of pull up and make it work and find a spot that's scenic and private. And it really is just so much more enjoyable to do it that way than it is to spend hours on the computer trying to find the right spot 6 months in advance and, you know, going that route.
How long did it take you and your partner to get to the point that you're at now? I know that you said that you kind of started out in a slow rolling a little bit, and then all of a sudden I'm sure it popped.
Yeah, it's been about 5 years. We started in March 2019, so this last March was our 5-year anniversary. And yeah, it was a slow roll for sure. We had kind of hit our pop in like 2021 when we went on the YouTube with Bob Wells, who's like a famous van lifer. He was in that movie Nomadland, and he was, we were doing some donations for a program he had at the time, giving vans to people who were, you know, on the edge of homelessness, and we were kind of contributing some of our kits to them. And he had us on his YouTube channel, and that was definitely a big catalyst for some of our growth and getting out there more in the world.
And I really do like the fact that, you know, if you're someone that's, you know, a novice like me and you just like to go, you have the standard, here's going to fit your vehicle, or this is what's going to fit in there. But if you do want to take that step up, and maybe you come across that van and you're like, man, I really want to kind of design this, you guys will actually work with them to get exactly what the setup they need.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really like we have a lot of people who do start small with the kits and then they come back to us. You know, they have like maybe a small van, like a 40 series or a Ram ProMaster City or something. They buy like a trunk bunk or a basic bunk, and then they come back and they're like, hey, I want you to like insulate and do an electrical system in here. And that's one thing that we really pride ourselves on is our ability and willingness to sort of take on projects of different sizes and all kinds of different vehicles. A lot of conversion shops, they like only work on the Mercedes Sprinter, and they will only take a job that's like 100,000 or more. And we really want to be more inclusive and you know, helpful on that level. So the biggest restriction with like the custom shop and working with us is, of course, you gotta bring your vehicle to us in Washington State. But we've had clients come from drive from Florida to work with us. You know, I mean, up as far away as you can go, because like we offer something very specific, and we'll work with them to do it the way they want it.
I know the van life, well, you could go on YouTube and watch van life videos for hours and hours
forever.
And hours.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it really is like a popular trend that's going in, and you guys being kind of the ground roots kind of a company, I think that it's really cool that you're soaring like you are. And what's the biggest that you've done? Are you doing just like, you know, like a consignment van or a Sprinter? Is that about the biggest you're going? Have you done a school bus?
We have worked on school buses, you know, doing one-off projects. We haven't done a full conversion. Right now, we're finishing up a Mercedes Sprinter, like 170-inch wheelbase, high roof, extended. That's probably the biggest van we've done, and it's definitely the biggest ticket project we've done as well. So that's going to be finishing up in the next couple weeks. So we're excited to share that. It's based off of a pleasure way model Sprinter, but you know, they wanted to have a company with like better build standards do it, because there's a lot of those like RV companies getting into that space of like making conversion vans, and they're fine, but a lot of the times the build quality and the materials and the systems aren't installed very well, and you know, you could still pay $250,000 and get something that breaks a lot. And so people are kind of going to more like, you know, high quality, you know, real people builders like us to work with it. And it's cool to see kind of how people might be inspired by something that's already out there, but they like come bring it to us and they want it built to a nicer degree, and they want to have more say in the different features and stuff.
What's the wood type that you're using? Do you have multiple choices?
Yeah, I mean, we use like a lot of domestic plywood out of like Washington and Oregon, like, you know, maple veneer, poplar core stuff. But we use all kinds of materials. I mean, we've been using a lot of bamboo plywood, which is really nice, like sturdy, sustainable material. We do some solid wood stuff. It really depends. If it's a custom build, we can basically use anything, because, you know, 5-minute drive from us, there's a world-class wood supplier called Eden Saw, and they supply like, you know, cabinet shops all over Seattle, and they're in our little towns, and we can just go over to them anytime we want without having to wait for the delivery truck. So it's pretty nice.
Oh, that's convenient. Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. If you ever import, if you're like a wood nerd and you're ever in Port Townsend, you got to go to Eden Saw, because maybe don't bring your wallet with you, because there is just like so like every possible like species and live edge slabs and lumbers and turning block. You know, it's a crazy woodworking candy store, and we get to take stuff from them all the time, which is awesome.
That is incredible. Now, one of the things that I've seen a lot is, you know, not only the conversion in the vans, but a lot of people going with the retro camper trailers and gutting them and then rebuilding them. Have you guys done any projects like that?
Yeah, we have. We've mostly done like people who need help with systems and those things. You know, we have done a couple like total redo of the interior cabinets and stuff like that. A lot of people when they're doing, you know, we live in a pretty crafty town and there's a lot of people who have like these retirement projects and they might be carpenters and they want to handle a lot of that stuff, but they're nervous about redoing the electrical, the plumbing in a old camper trailer. And I think justifiably so. We've seen a lot of terrifying DIY electrical builds come through that need to get repaired that were like probably a week away from catching fire.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah. And so it's nice when, you know, we can offer that, you know, you get to do the part you like and the part that you're comfortable with, and we can handle the, you know, whatever kind of those gaps are that, you know, you don't want to deal with.
That's awesome. Again, the website is campncar.com, all one word. And you guys do shipping. So if I'm in Wyoming and I want to get the standard truck bed, I can get that with no issues, right?
Yeah, all the kits we sell on our web store are available for shipment. You know, free shipping to anyone in the lower 48. We do ship internationally into Alaska and Hawaii too. And then for the custom stuff, you got to come to us, but our team's definitely worth it.
That's awesome. Again, Steve Moore, creator of Camp and Car, could be the change that we all need, especially if we like to do adventure, Steve. And I appreciate you sitting with me today.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Drew. Thanks for having me on here. I really appreciate it.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.